Welcome to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. My guest is professional bowler Matt Sanders. Matt is a 2012 graduate of Wrights High School in Evansville, was a two-time All-American at Marion University in Indianapolis, where he now lives. Matt Sanders was voted the 2017 Rookie of the Year in the Professional Bowling Association. Matt Sanders, welcome, and you're a little tired. Tell us why.
First off, thank you, David. Thanks for having me. But I was actually in Delaware this past weekend for a tournament that we had. It was for a national title. I was lucky enough to get second. I lost in a title match, but I mean, as long as I keep putting myself in that position, it'll be a good career. But yeah, I'm a little tired. It's been a long trip. Drove there and back and got into Indianapolis around 6 in the morning yesterday. So it's been pretty crazy.
And you're on the road again tomorrow?
Yes, definitely. I'm out to Cincinnati tomorrow and then Coldwater, Ohio for the rest of the weekend.
Wow. Well, also some exciting news for both you and your sport. First of all, tell us about being drafted by the Philadelphia Hitmen.
That is one of the coolest experiences I've ever had, actually. I believe the PBA League started 5 or 6 years ago, and it's something different. Bowling's kind of known for being laid back and really low-key. You see it on TV. It's really quiet. The fans aren't making any noise or anything, but the PBA League's a little different. There's always noise going on. Everybody's cheering, and it's a little crazy, but it's something different that the PBA has brought, and it's kind of the main hit now for the season, really.
Well, how many people were on a professional bowling team like the Hitmen?
I believe there were 8 teams, and there's 5 people per team, so it's 40 of the best bowlers in the world, basically.
Wow. Now, the Professional Bowling Association, also great news there. They've signed a broadcast deal with Fox Sports. I know you're very excited about that.
Definitely. I believe the PBA was with ESPN for around 30 years, and that relationship ended this year. I believe Fox just offers something a little better than ESPN did. I know the PBA hasn't been as big as it used to be back in the day, unfortunately. It's been hard to get sponsors, but I believe the commissioner, Tom Clark, said that years ago they used to basically kind of invest in us. They used to help us find sponsors, and recently that hasn't been the case. So Fox offered that deal. They actually had to kind of invest in us, which makes us feel better. They have to help us find sponsors, so it takes a little load off the PBA itself. But there's more live TV shows. There's more shows on the actual Fox station. So it's on Fox itself. There's 4 or 5 shows, I believe, between the majors that we have. And then about 15 or 20 shows will be on Fox Sports as well. So it's a really cool deal, actually.
Now, when does the league play start?
The PBA League actually is, I believe, right now it's at the end of the schedule. It's in July. Since we started a new deal, the schedule's actually changed. We've been used to kind of a swings, basically, the last few years. Years ago, they used to be every week, kind of like golf. Every weekend, there'd be in a tournament. But the last few years, there just hasn't been as many tournaments. So it'd be you bowl for 3 or 4 weeks, and then you have a week or two off, and it's just kind of that's how it goes. But next year, we bowl from January through June or July, almost straight. It's different with the new deal. So we'll see how that goes.
Now, you are a professional bowler. That means that's your full-time job.
Yes, that's what I do right now. It's fun when you're doing well. It's a little stressful when you're not, but it's being 24 years old, it's something I've always wanted to do. So it's really awesome to be able to have the support I have and go out there and be able to compete with people I used to watch on TV.
Living the dream, Matt.
Yes.
You are living the dream. So let's go back to those early days. I understand you have some great memories of learning the sport at Evansville's Arc Lanes because your dad was the manager of Arc Lanes.
Yes, my dad was the manager for about 20 years. I believe he worked there for about 25 or 30.
That's Larry, right?
Yep, Larry Sanders. Yep, and that's just how I learned, basically. I followed him around all the time. I bowled every day through middle school, high school, all that stuff. I would spend my weekends, basically. If I wasn't bowling, I'd spend it probably watching leagues. I was just in a bowling center all the time. So that's what I did. That's what I do. So I'm very fortunate to have the opportunities I had today because of the time I spent and the help I've had from my dad and my mom, too. So
I understand that you started bowling, or at least trying to bowl, at age 3. Is that correct?
Yep, 3 years old. I had, I believe, a 4-pound rubber ball with a bunch of holes in it. My dad had me throw it down the lane.
And the rest is history. Now, when did you actually start competing as a bowler?
I mean, as a youth bowler, I competed for scholarships, as a lot of them do nowadays. My first like kind of real tournaments was probably when I was about 14 years old, and first big tournament, I was about a half year later, and I did pretty well, so it was just something that finally kicked in. And then in high school, I was fortunate enough to do well. Like I said, I practiced every day, and I won 2 state titles when I was in high school, and I just kept going to some of the national tournaments, all the tournaments throughout Indiana, and did well there. And after I got out of college, I spent a year as a kind of an amateur, which is a weird term for bowling, because amateur tournaments can have professionals in them too. So the terms, it's a very loose term.
So there's, it's pro-am.
Yeah, there's a lot of arguments and discussions that go with mm-hmm. that. But yeah, I spent a year out of college basically bowling just every tournament possible. I bowled a few PBA tournaments as a non-member. And then I was lucky to find a friend who would help sponsor me and put me out in tournaments, and that's just kind of how it started.
Did you play other sports as well, Matt?
I used to play basketball in grade school. I was pretty good at it, but it got to the point where, I mean, I've been at a bowling center my whole life, so one day I just kind of packed it up and quit, and I put all my focus on bowling.
Now, we were talking earlier, of course, Lily King is a Wright High School graduate. Of course, everybody knows Lily King, the Olympic swimmer, gold medal winner. And we were talking about we need to get bowling in the Olympic Games, and there's been some talk about that off and on, but it just really hasn't happened yet. So, Matt, we've got to change things.
Definitely. I believe... like we talked about earlier, I believe it was on the short list a few years ago, which is farther than it's got recently, actually. But I don't really know what the problem is, why it's not getting through. I believe there's been some speculation with how it's governed, I guess, and some of the just the development of the sport and how they regulate it, basically, mm-hmm. with everything that goes on. So I don't really know. I'm not all into the political side of everything, but... hopefully, eventually, it'll be there one day.
Well, you know, it's bowling is popular around the world.
Definitely.
I mean, in all these, I think there's 90 countries, I think, have bowling teams mm-hmm. and bowling action. And we have curling as an Olympic sport. We have badminton as an Olympic sport. We have table tennis as an Olympic sport. Yeah. And they were kind of, you know, they started out as recreational games, and they became more and more advanced. So I'm an advocate for bowling as an Olympic sport. So if you're out there and if you have any influence on the Olympic Committee, you know, put a plug in for bowling. Okay, now from Wright's High School, where you did very well as a student bowler, you went to Marion University. Now, how did that happen? Did you get a scholarship to go there?
Yes, I did. I was very fortunate enough to go there. I visited a few schools, but it's one of those things. I mean, I've lived in Evansville my whole life. Basically, Indiana is all I knew, so I didn't want to move too far away. Mm-hmm. Luckily, Marion was about 3.5 hours away, and then we had a really good recruiting class come in for bowling. So I had a lot of friends that already went there in the first place. They had all the finance courses that I wanted to take, and the school was a really small school and really nice, and like I said, it was close to home, so it just kind of matched up for me. So mm-hmm. Now I'm stuck there. now I'm living in Indianapolis. So.
Well, it's kind of the crossroads of America, and you're on the road a lot, so I guess that helps. Now, my guest is pro bowler Matt Sanders, Evansville native, voted the 2017 Rookie of the Year in the Professional Bowling Association, recently drafted by the Philadelphia Hitmen. A lot going on in Matt's life. So, Matt, for golfers, it's a hole-in-one. Now, for bowlers, it's a perfect game, a 300. Have you ever bowled a 300, Matt?
Yes, I have. I've probably bowled around 30 or 40
really?
That are sanctioned through like leagues and tournaments. Obviously, I've probably thrown some in practice outside of that, but I've had a few, that's for sure.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Now, that is a dream of amateur bowlers everywhere. Now, what's been your average as a professional bowler?
Last year, for my first year on tour, I believe my average was around 215, which for the tour, that's pretty good because we don't bowl on what you call a house pattern and kind of a typical house pattern that you would see at just your local bowling center. That's kind of catered to people, where if you kind of know what you're doing, you have a little idea, it helps your ball get back to the pocket. We bowl on stuff that's a lot harder than what people realize. But this year I'm around 220. It's gone up a little bit, but that's just kind of something I've been aiming towards. I want to get better. My goal is to win, so I've been working really hard. I had some time off, unfortunately, but I'm been able to come back, and like this past weekend I did well, so hopefully things are looking up and I can keep doing a little better.
Now, what's your practice routine?
It's really weird, honestly. That's a big discussion of bowling because some people don't practice very often, but there's some people like I said, when I was in high school, I practiced every single day. It was just nonstop. As I've gotten older, it's been harder because I'm on the road so much. It's kind of like if you think about football or basketball, they're on the road, so they don't have much time to practice. Kind of the same deal here, but when I'm home, I'll use like a league to practice, or when I go practice, it's either probably shoot spares. People ask for advice. Spares are the biggest. That's probably most number one thing that a professional or anybody will give advice on is just get your spares. So I'll work on some sevens, some corner pins, sevens and tens to start, and then I'm a big field player, so I'll just kind of work on things. I'm to the point now where I can kind of tell what's going on, or I can go back and watch a video. I can take a video and see what's happening, and I'll just focus on one thing at a time. It's what my dad always taught me. If you work on too many things at once, then it's not going to go through. You're stressing yourself out, basically. So it's just practice a few days a week when I have the time, and just
what's a field player? What does that mean?
It's kind of like I don't know how to describe it. Basically, when I have it, I know I have it. There's so many things that go on with a approach through bowling. There's just timing and muscle memory and just all the habits that you have. But some days I don't feel as well as others. I know something's off, basically. Mm-hmm. So that's why when I go to practice, I try to work on the things that I know. It's kind of like my fundamentals that help me get back to where I know I'll at least be able to compete. And hopefully if I find a zone, find a groove, I'll be able to just work through it.
Well, we see this with golfers, too. They talk about the mental game.
Definitely.
You've got to be into that right frame of mind to do well. So there's a lot going on in your head, I guess, when you step up to the foul line to go down that 60 feet to the pins.
Definitely. That was one of the things I've always been taught. You have to have the strongest mental game possible. You're going to make bad shots, just like in golf. Bowling is compared to golf a lot. That's what us bowlers compare it to. But you're going to make bad shots, you're going to make good shots. One thing I'm known for, I'm really low-key. I keep everything the same. That's just what my dad kind of always taught me, luckily. Stay level-headed. I don't get too high, don't get too low. It's hard not to get low, especially when you make a few bad shots in a row, but that's what I've been working for my whole life, is to get past those points and keep moving forward. But you've had to have a strong mental game with how many games we bowl per day and everything that just happens. It's really tough sometimes.
Now, bowlers out there that are listening, they know a lot of this stuff. They probably want to know, how many steps do you take to the line?
I take 4 steps, and if you were to watch me on TV or on social media, my game's a little different. If you watch it from the side, I start from the back of the approach, which if you take 4 steps, that is a very long step. So I almost call them lunges. If you watch other professionals, they probably take 5, sometimes 6 steps. Some of them take 4, but they're probably another 2 feet ahead of me on the approach, and they take smaller, normal steps. I kind of have lunges to the line. It's just, I think it's something when I was younger, just trying to get ball speed and everything, I was a little quicker. It's just something with my timing that I always had. But yeah, I take 4 steps, but you can take however many you want as long as it's working for you.
Now, would you have any, what's the biggest tip that you give to an amateur bowler? I mean, is there something that they do wrong consistently, and you see this in people at the lanes?
Honestly, it's kind of like what you just talked about. A lot of people, if it's kind of a beginner, maybe they're pushing off and pushing their ball and their foot at the wrong time. So basically, I have a 4-step approach and I'm left-handed, so I would push away the ball with my first step. If you're a 5-step approach, I would take my first step with my right foot and then push away. It's all about the timing. That everybody's timing can be different, but a basic timing that people go off of, the fundamentals, that's just how it goes. And some people just haven't watched or haven't looked up the kind of steps to take. But yeah, it's usually what I kind of look for a beginner.
Mm-hmm. Now, the great great lefty Earl Anthony was a left-handed bowler. Of course, he's a legend in the sport. And who are some of the people that you watched growing up as bowlers?
I watched everybody, man. What's bad is I'm still – one of the biggest struggles I had my first year was I'm such a bowling fan and bowling nerd in the first place. It's, I mean, I'm bowling next to the guys that I watched when I was young. So at some point I had to get over it, which sometimes you'll still get stuck and I'll see Tommy Jones sitting next to me and I'll watch him throw a shot. Man, I used to watch him when I was little and still looks the same. But yeah, people like Tommy Jones, Parker Bone, Pete Weber, obviously you can't get past Pete Weber, but one of the guys, fortunately, passed away years ago. My dad always told me that Dick Weber, he was a great ambassador for the sport, and I actually was lucky enough to meet him. I believe I was 8 or 9 years old, and I got to bowl a game against him. It was really cool. I don't remember too much of it. Apparently, we have it on VHS somewhere, so I had to find it at some point, but when my dad worked for Arc Lanes, Dick Weber owned, or I don't know if he owned or was just a manager. He had his own bowling center, basically, in St. Louis, so kind of had the hookup to go meet him when I was younger. That was one of the coolest experiences ever. Even though I was little, I just knew what was going on. That was really cool. But yeah, Dick Weber, Tommy Jones is my favorite to watch. There's so many people that have had influences on me. So it's really
I like you admit that you're a bowling nerd. You got to be a nerd,
yeah,
really.
You have to
and dig into these sports. Now we're talking to Matt Sanders, Evansville Navy professional bowler. Coming up, we're going to find out about the equipment needed to compete in the pros, the balls, the shoes, bowling shirts, the sponsorships. A lot goes on with being a professional bowler, the travel as well. Two Main Street is sponsored by Evansville Regional Airport. Welcome back to Two Main Street. I'm David James. My guest is Matt Sanders, professional bowler, Evansville native, Wrights High grad. Matt has been drafted by the Pro League's Philadelphia Hitmen. So, Matt, tell us about the gear needed by a pro bowler. Like tennis players, they travel with a half dozen rackets, maybe more. Do you have several bowling balls you carry from place to place?
Several bowling balls would be an understatement.
Oh, really?
Like this past weekend when I went to Delaware, I brought 14 or 15 bowling balls with me. Being left-handed, unfortunately, like, it's different. People don't understand. The more shots run in the lane, the oil kind of moves. It is taken in by the bowling ball itself. Bowling balls absorb oil. That's why there's so many bowling balls to choose from and on the market, because they all do different things. Some of them hook earlier than others, some farther down the lane. And it's all based on just how you want the ball to go through the pins at certain times. But, yeah, I have a lot of bowling balls. I'm lucky enough to have an awesome sponsor, sponsored by Track Bowling and M&I International. They supply my bowling balls and equipment and bags and all the accessories and everything. But yeah, it's when you fly, unfortunately, unless you want to pay a big fee, most people take six. But if you're a beginner or anything, just start with a entry-level ball, basically, or a plastic ball and work yourself up. But yeah, there's so many different bowling balls and different ways you can get it to manipulate it to do certain things, and it's unbelievable.
So you have a different ball maybe for a split that you're trying to hit?
I will throw a plastic ball at all my spares usually. That's basically it. The plastic ball doesn't have the hook to it. It's kind of like a house ball that you pick up at when you're just recreational bowling. But yeah. It just depends on what we're bowling on, the patterns. Longer patterns, I'll have something that wants to hook earlier because there's just more oil. There's more length to the pattern.
Now, what do you mean when you say oil? What do you mean by that?
Basically, when the lay machine that they use, they have patterns that they put out, and it can be that's one of the biggest things that people don't understand in bowling. That's probably why people don't appeal to the sport, because they don't see what's going on. You can't see the oil, unfortunately, and how it moves on the lane. But there's different patterns. Like this past weekend, we bowled on a 42-foot pattern, so that means it was oiled 42 feet down the lane. That's how much oil was going down the lane, and it has a shape to it as well. Some of them can be shaped to where it's easier, like a house shot, and some of them can be what they call as a flat pattern, and it's the same amount of oil across the lane. So if you miss, it's going to be you're going to pay for it. If you go to a normal, like say you go to Franklin Lanes or Arc Lanes, there's less oil on the outside towards the gutter, so if you throw it at the gutter, your ball will hook back if you have a hook. And there's more oil in the middle of the lane, so if you miss in, it'll still hit the head pin. It makes it easier for someone who sort of has been practicing to be able to hit the head pin. So many factors.
on a few of those things. So I guess you have to be a pro to really understand this stuff. So, hey, you're doing great, though. So now you go from place to place. You got all these bowling balls and everything. And like you said, you do have a sponsor. And most of, I guess most professionals have to have sponsors to pay some of the travel bills and everything else that you have to go through.
Definitely. Like I said, I'm sponsored by Track. I use finger inserts. They're grips. They're kind of like a rubber material, so my fingers don't get torn up with how many games I bowl. It's Vice inserts. There are several different insert companies, but I use Vice. They're the best for me, at least. I'm also I can't forget Billy at Gray's Pro Shop. That most people are affiliated with a pro shop to kind of mm-hmm. help drill their equipment and everything. I'm fortunate enough. It's not considered a sponsor. I'm what they call an ambassador with Bowl for Kids' Sake and Big Brothers Big Sisters. When I moved to Indy, I was fortunate enough to meet my friend Brent Phillips, who they are friends with someone who works with Big Brothers and Big Sisters, and he hosts a bunch of events there. It's a really big thing. But they knew some people to talk to, and they had never had a professional bowler kind of represent Bowl for Kids' Sake. And Bowl for Kids' Sake and Big Brothers Big Sisters, that's a very large organization. So we gave them an idea, and luckily for me, we went with it. And so I'm kind of an ambassador. I'm what you call a big champion with Big Brothers Big Sisters. And actually this week, tomorrow, we have a charity event in Cincinnati that I'm going to. Our Hitman team, there's four of us out of the five, are going to be bowling against an all-star team around Cincinnati, and they had drawings for the other five players that we're going to be bowling against. It's just a big charity event. I believe they raised over $2,000 or $3,000 already for, I believe, a local organization there, and they're going to give some to my organization as well. So just to have those sponsors and everything I'm affiliated with, it's awesome. And unfortunately, bowling with where it's at, most if you can find a sponsor, it's rare, but the bowling ball companies really help us out a bunch. It helps all the professionals out, definitely.
Well, also giving back to the community, that boosts the sport too.
Yes, for sure. Golf's definitely really good at doing that. Like I said, we compare it to golf, and mm-hmm. Anything to help out the community, I'm all for.
Now, you talked earlier about you're kind of a more laid-back bowler. You're not the flashy one.
Yeah.
I saw some video on YouTube. You were in a world championship match with Kyle Troop.
Yeah.
Now, this guy, he's just the opposite of you.
Definitely.
He's got like Richard Simmons hair. He was wearing this multicolored bodysuit, and he bowled with two hands. Now, these characters, though, I mean, I guess they bring people into the arena, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. I actually had to bowl against him again this weekend. But, yeah, he has his own – that's the thing. He has his own brand. when he came out on tour, his dad is a Guppy Troop. He used to be a professional bowler, a really good professional bowler. But yeah, Kyle came out, and there's just some guys like that he has his own thing. He's known for his afro, his Bob Ross, Richard Simmons type
sure.
hair, and he has his pants matches his shirt. He has those bright colors. He's a little more flamboyant. He's actually been on, I believe it was like SportsCenter's top 10 for him and another bowler won a doubles tournament on ESPN, and he brought out his thing is if he throws a messenger or something throws the head pin off the wall to take out a 10 pin late, he'll bring out a pick for his hair and he'll pick his hair on TV, and that's just kind of his thing. Yeah, I don't do that usually. I'm really laid back, keep even keel. That's just something I just want to stay focused. But I'm sure if I get on TV one day, I haven't won on TV yet. I won off on a live stream. But I'm sure if I get there, you'll see a little more emotion out of me. Maybe not that much, but yeah, a little bit.
Now, bowlers, do you have, like, superstitions before a match? Or is there a kind of routine you go through?
Yeah, definitely. I think probably every bowler is superstitious.
Tell us.
I don't really know what they go through, but people probably eat the same thing if they did well as the day before. I've done that before, probably, just not even thinking about it. But wear the same boxers or underwear? I don't know. But, I mean, there's a routine just at the bowling center, basically, that every guy has. There's a pre-shot routine that people, whether it's wiping your shoe off, grabbing your rosin bags, your hands been sweating, you've been bowling for 10 hours already. Everybody kind of has a routine or a superstition outside of that they probably go through.
Now, are there nicknames for bowlers?
There have been because of the PBA League, basically. I don't remember everybody's nickname since I was only been out there for a year.
What do they call you?
Mine's Sandman, which I'd contemplated that when I was younger. Didn't really know if it'd go through, but I guess I'm going to have to stick with it now because they were chanting Sandman on ESPN for our three shows. So I guess that's what we're going with for now. It makes sense.
We're talking to Matt Sanders, Sandman. Professional bowler, Wright's High grad, Rookie of the Year in 2017 with the Professional Bowling Association. Okay, you're a young bowler on the tour. What are the older guys? Did they give you any kind of grief? Or do you get any kind of indoctrination or anything?
Not really. I mean, the older guys who are in their 50s and 60s, like Walter Ray, Pete, they kind of just do their own thing. They've been out there for so long, I wouldn't blame them. But some of my friends, they're a little older. Bowling's really lucky right now. A lot of the younger, it's become a younger thing on TV. If you watch a lot of TV shows, it's been a kind of a new age type thing. Guys in between 20 and 25 are on TV every time instead of the older guys, which is probably good, appeal to a younger audience. But not too much grief. I mean, they'll give you grief here and there. So mm-hmm. I deal with it. I laugh with them. They don't have anything on me, so.
Not yet, huh?
No.
You're young.
Yeah. So I'm good to go for now.
I did some research on some bowling terms, and these are some of the terms I have never heard before. And maybe, I don't know, they might be new to you. So let's try a couple of them, okay?
For sure.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay, an Andy Varapapa 300.
I don't know that one.
Okay, that is 12 strikes in a row over a span of two games. And this bowler, Andy Varapapa, says that should count as a 300.
Huh, yeah.
If you get 12 strikes in a row over a span of two games. Okay, now everybody, a beer frame, what's that?
You know, I should know that.
Or a cola frame. We'll say cola frame.
I believe that's when everybody strikes or when everybody but one person strikes and...
And that person has to
pay for the beer.
Okay.
Which fortunately happens to me every once in a while during league. But
now, bedposts. That's a 7-10 split?
7-10, yeah.
Is that a
That's
tough...
not used very often, that term. But, yeah, that's one of the hardest beers to make for sure.
You don't want to see one of those.
You won't see that made, that's for sure.
And a clover? Four strikes in a row?
No, they don't call it that. It's,
these must be some old terms going way back. What about a chicken sandwich? It's a strike followed by three spares and another strike. Oh, boy, we're going way back here. You ever heard of grandma's teeth?
I have heard that, but I can't remember what it is.
Okay.
I think somebody brought that up before.
It's a 4-7-9-10 or a 6-7-8-10 split.
That's a weird combination. I've heard it used not very often. Yeah, these must be really old terms because they don't use them today.
What about ride the lightning?
I've never heard that one.
That's when you go down the gutter, real close to the gutter,
yeah.
And then you hook into the pocket. So I know what a pocket is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Now what is the pocket?
The pocket is, well, for me, I'm left-handed, so it'd be the one or between the one and two pin, basically, you want your ball to enter, hit that head pin first, the pin up front. And for a righty, it'd be the one and three pins. So basically, that's your goal is to get it there, hopefully in the right spot to carry all 10 pins.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the toughest split, you think?
Probably, I mean, there's so many. I mean, 7-10's hard. 7-10's actually probably easier than a few other splits because you can, if you throw it hard, you can bounce the pin out of the back and it'll roll up front. I've made it two or three times, I think. The big four split where there's it'd be the 4-7 and the 6-10, so it'd be two on each side. That's really difficult. That's probably harder actually than 7-10, I would believe.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you done any like trick shots?
I haven't really tried them too much. They used to have trick shots on TV a few years ago.
Right, I remember those.
But I haven't tried too many. The few I've tried, I haven't really haven't figured them out yet. But I'm scared I'm going to break something if I mess up. So, but maybe I'll work on some point.
What's the crowd favorite? What do they get the crowd all fired up?
Usually it's, it just depends really. I mean, just like that kind of like you make a big split, which will be difficult. People know what if it's a difficult split, that mm-hmm. really gets the crowd going. What they call a messenger, where your ball kind of hits half pocket, it's not flush into the pocket, and you send the pins just flying everywhere, mm-hmm. and it takes it out. It's just, it's something, when it comes down to it and you do something like that, that's when it's really going crazy for the crowd usually.
So now, bowling is entertainment. I mean, especially when it's on television, you want to entertain people mm-hmm. that are watching. So does that come into your head too? You have to play a little flair with it?
It has at some point, and that's the thing. Like I said, I'm really level-headed and really low-key. It's just the problem is that I want to win, and I don't want to have to sure. worry about the entertainment side mm-hmm. because I want to focus. I want to win just as much or more than anybody else out there. So I've thought about it before, and maybe at some point if I can figure out and – do more things at once, I'll do something, but it's some people can do it and some people, that's their natural tendency. Sure. It's just not mine. That's yeah. just not how I go. And you see that in every sport. Some mm-hmm. some guys are really low key and they just go through their motion and they focus on what they're doing. Some guys can out there just beat their chest and they just go crazy. It's just how humans are basically.
Well, you're the Sandman. I mean, that I guess that's your persona. So yeah. That's cool. Now, coming up on 2 Main Street, we're going to ask Matt some bowling questions that were posed from a college bowling coach, Kentucky Wesleyan's bowling coach, Scott Thompson. He sent me some questions for you, Matt.
Awesome.
We're also going to talk about the history of bowling, some real trivia there to share and amaze with your bowling friends. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport. This is 2 Main Street. I'm David James, and if you're just joining us, my guest is Evansville native and professional bowler Matt Sanders, the Sandman. He was voted the 2017 Rookie of the Year by the Professional Bowling Association, and Matt has been recently drafted by the Philadelphia Hitmen. So a lot going on in Matt's life, and Matt, I want to share with our listeners some of the history of your sport. And you can chime in anytime you want to here. Now, this information comes from the International Bowling Museum and Hall of Fame.
Okay.
There you go. Artifacts found in a child's grave in Egypt suggest there was a crude form of bowling in 3200 BC. You ever heard that one?
I haven't. I know there's been, you'll probably go back and find like stone bowling balls or pins with holes punched into them. I haven't heard that one before.
Okay. Well, here's another one. A German historian believes bowling started in Europe in 300 AD, and there's evidence a form of bowling was in vogue in England in 1366 when King Edward III allegedly outlawed the sport to keep his troops focused on archery practice. There you go.
I believe I have heard that one. I read a book about that one. Yep.
So, in the English, Dutch, and German settlers brought bowling to America. And there's actually a literary reference. Washington Irving wrote that Rip Van Winkle awoke to the sound of crashing nine pins. So, I guess there were nine pins before ten pins. Huh. There you go. Bowling balls used to be made of hard wood. In 1905, the first rubber bowling balls were introduced. 1914, the Brunswick Corporation came out with the first mineral light ball. And another big change, of course, the automatic pin spotter introduced in the 50s, eliminating the need for pin boys. So, yeah, I remember those old movies of the guys back there in the little kind of cage picking up the pins. That'd be an interesting job.
Yeah, that would be...
In looks like you'd lose your hearing quickly.
Definitely. Yeah, I remember you could see some of those old videos on YouTube and stuff where they're all standing back there and they'd have to do that. I couldn't imagine doing that.
Now, it's estimated that bowling is enjoyed by some 100 million people in 90 countries around the world. So have you done any international bowling?
I have not yet, but actually at the end of September and start of October, I will be flying to Thailand and Korea for my first international trip, so we will see how that goes. I've never been overseas before.
Oh, that'll be exciting.
Pretty
definitely.
Excited, so yeah, I'm excited.
So you'll get to bowl against some of the locals there?
Definitely, there's two big tournaments out there, and I've seen it on social media the past few years, and I'm lucky enough to be invited to go this year, so it should be fun.
So you're going to put all those bowling balls in luggage when you fly over there?
Yeah, we'll see how many I can fit on the plane to take over.
That could be expensive, definitely. Now, I reached out to a tri-state bowling coach for some questions. Scott Thompson coaches the bowling teams, men's and women's, at Kentucky Wesleyan College. Of course, that's in Owensboro. This is the inaugural season for the Panther bowling team, so obviously they're very excited about the sport over there in Owensboro. And Coach Thompson wants to know, what message do you have, Matt Sanders, to get more young people interested in bowling?
I think today the biggest thing is you see bowling as it used to be a really blue-collar type thing. And now if you go to most bowling centers, a lot of bowling centers are closing, the older bowling centers, because people just don't – it's not as big as it used to be. Now you see more of it's related to like a party atmosphere. They'll have a bar, a restaurant. People will be drinking, having a good time. They'll eat food. They'll incorporate it with other activities. But, I mean, bowling's just – luckily, bowling's something that everybody can do. It doesn't matter if you're handicapped. It doesn't have
sure.
– you can have a ramp. Everybody can figure out a way to do it. You can have help. But
they put bumpers on the
– Definitely, yeah. There's so many ways it can be done. It's just the – I think hopefully soon people will be able to go out there and have more fun doing it. Like I said, it seems to be changing with how it is today. But, I mean, I encourage everybody to go out there and do it. I like to do it, obviously, so
– Well, they have like the glow bowl.
Yeah, you know, the cosmic
lights,
bowling.
You have
yeah,
music and everything, and it's a party atmosphere.
Yes,
it's a fiesta, really.
Yeah.
When you go to these events. So, another question here: do you notice the crowds when you're competing, and does that affect your game, Matt?
The first time, it really depends. I've been on TV individually twice, and for the PBA league three times. Just every setup's kind of different because of the room and bowling centers. That's another thing. It's not like golf or basketball. You can't fit 11,000 people in a bowling center. You're lucky to get 200 in there. So that's where also bowling struggles to kind of get the exposure and sponsorship money because people aren't there. But it just depends. My first time on TV, it was the people were farther away. It was I was in the National Bowling Stadium, which you'll see on if you watch Kingpin, the old movie Kingpin. That was where part of it was shot.
Where's that at?
It's Reno, Nevada. Okay. Yeah, it's basically, to me, it's the coolest bowling center because the ceilings are like 100 feet tall. It's a really cool place. But it's just like, yeah, it depends. I was lucky enough to make a TV show in Indianapolis earlier this year, so I had my home crowd. It was really cool. Unfortunately, I didn't do very well, but it was a closer setting. The fans were closer, but it's something where I've been on there enough now to where it doesn't bother me as much. It's a learning curve just like everything else is. So hopefully if I make it again, it won't be a problem. But it was really nerve-wracking the first time because I knew that hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of people were watching on TV, and then plus the crowd next to me. And you don't – during qualifying, you don't bowl with the crowd on the lanes next to you watching you. So it's a different feeling, but it's cool and nerve-wracking at the same time.
Now, the crowd, okay, I mean, they can be raucous and everything and get a little loud, but when you step up to the foul line there, is there quiet? Do people respect you?
Yeah, it's like comparing it to golf again. It's when the bowler's up on the approach, it's usually quiet. The only time it's not quiet is during the PBA league. Like I said, it's a whole different animal. Yeah, they actually encourage... Because one thing, you don't want people to just make random noises. Like you watch Tiger Woods in a golf swing. If somebody's going to make a noise in his golf swing, he's going to stop. They're probably going to tell the person either kick him out or they're going to tell them to not do that. It's the same thing with bowling. Halfway through your approach, you don't want somebody making a noise in the middle of the approach. You'd rather have it the whole time so it's a constant noise or just not at all. So,
but when you release the ball, then they can...
Then most people will be making
like
the noise.
Well, like in the golf, they say, in the hole!
Yeah, there you go. Chaining some random stuff.
Are there groupies in the bowling establishment? They follow the tournaments? Same people?
Sometimes there are. It's different. Especially if you go to the women's tour. I've been to watch some of the women bowl past few years, and it's a different audience because I guess the women's tour was gone for a while. I don't remember how many years, and it came back about 3 years ago. But when I've gone, there's a bunch of, I guess, some of the older people go watch the Women Bowl because they were used to watching them back in the day. It's just a different, it's just a different audience. But there are some that if they can travel, they'll go, just because they've been fans their whole life, just like any other thing. But like I said, it's just can't fit that many people in there. So you may find 10, 20 people in there that kind of go from tournament to tournament, but it just depends on really where it's at.
So kind of a league of their own.
Yeah.
Women's bowling tour. So, Is there any co-ed bowling here? Do they ever do that?
There's one tournament right now, and it's not on TV. It's called the Lucy. That actually is it's really cool. I wasn't able to bowl it this year.
What's it called?
It's called the Lucy. The Lucy. It's a mixed doubles tournament, and it awards a PBA title and a PWBA title, and it supports breast cancer as well. So it's a really cool tournament. Hopefully I'll be able to bowl next year, but that's the only tournament right now that they had. They've had it on TV a few years ago. I don't know if it was that tournament in general, but they had a mixed doubles tournament on TV before. But I think that'd be something that they should probably try, honestly. I think to appease both crowds and have something different, maybe bring it back. So hopefully we'll see that soon.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Now, another question from Scott Thompson. He's the bowling coach at Kentucky Wesleyan College. He says that most people really don't know that colleges do offer scholarships for bowling. And he says, can you share what you know about that?
Definitely. College bowling's actually gotten really big the last few years. More and more schools are offering scholarships, just like he said. I know it's different with – I went to an NAIA school, and it's different from NCAA to NAIA, just like any other sport. There's different stipulations and regulations for scholarships, what you can do outside of that itself. But, when you're a youth bowler, you can bowl in tournaments for scholarship money, and then – there are some schools that offer scholarships to bowl. It just depends on your academics, obviously, just like any other sport, and your caliber of player. But there's different ways you can definitely earn money for scholarship through bowling.
And go for it.
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay, another question. What's been your favorite venue to bowl and why?
Like I said, the National Bowling Stadium is really cool. It's a different experience because it's a huge place. It's been on... You've seen it in movies before.
This is the one in Reno, right?
Yeah, one in Reno. I believe they're actually renovating it now. They're taking out the big – there's a huge stands where there's probably 30 rows of stands, which you can't see that in a bowling center, so it's a different setting. That and then Bayside Bowl where the PBA League is at. That's – like I said, this was my first year doing that. It was really cool.
Now, what city is that in?
Portland, Maine. Yeah, it's they used to have, I believe, 12 lanes, and it was kind of just like a – chill hangout spot. There's a bar behind the 12 lanes, and they added on. And they've had that PBA league there for about 4 or 5 years, and they had it in Indianapolis, I believe, the year before that. But Bayside Bowl is probably, if you ask any professional, it's probably the coolest place to go just because of the atmosphere and the crowd there. It's really cool.
Well, the history, too, I guess.
Definitely, yeah.
Kind of a legacy place. Okay, another question from Scott Thompson. When did you realize you were good? Really good.
I've been asked that a lot recently. I mean, there's one, like, I've worked my whole life to practice and compete at the highest level. So, I mean, when I got out of college, when I was in college, I was a pretty decent college bowler. I hadn't bowled too many tournaments against the best players in the world, but that's, like I said, I went out and bowled some amateur tournaments where some of those best players in the world are, and that's just when people ask me how do you take the next step, I mean you're not going to be able to take the next step if you don't try. So I was lucky enough. I went and tried some. I did well. I won a few amateur tournaments, and then I had tried the PBA tour. And it's bowling, just like anything else, it's a big confidence thing. I was out for about 2 months this year with an injury, and it really wasn't fun because I was. It's one thing. I'm 24 years old. On my way to becoming a big thing, hopefully, in the bowling world, and it just wasn't fun. So, but it's a confidence. I lost my confidence for 2 months, and then I've had about 2 months. I've had day in and day out, just trying to work to come back, and it's been tough. And luckily, this past weekend, I was able to find that confidence. And when you have that confidence, any pro will tell you if you don't walk into a bowling center thinking you're better than everybody else, then you're already lost. There's no reason for you to show up. So. It's when I was able to get that confidence and figure out my mental and physical game and put it all together, it's just, it'll click.
Now, this injury, was it a bowling injury?
I was working out. I don't know if we want to talk about it too much.
Okay, but
yeah.
You were injured.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was rough. It wasn't fun. But
so you do work out. I mean, you have to stay in shape.
Yeah, I haven't been able to recently just because it's hard with travel. Just depends on where you're
staying.
So
what would
really.
Be your workout routine?
I don't really like work out to like, get big or anything mm-hmm. to be a bodybuilder. Most of mine is endurance because when I won my first title, I'd started working out last summer, and it just after 10 games of bowling, I mean, people don't understand you're standing, and I mean, it's mentally and physically tolling at the same time. But I started working out more, I'd run, I'd lift weights a little bit just to have a little more strength and have a little more endurance. And now when I'm at my peak, when I'm working out more, I mean, I can feel like I can bowl 30 games in a day, which people would think you're crazy for doing. But I mean, you have to be able to do that to, if you're worn out like physically, then mentally you're going to be exhausted too. And you're like, man, is this over? Just when I started working out harder at the end of the year, it really showed, because I made a TV show, my first TV show, and then we flipped to this season, and I was just at the top of my game. I was always at top 10 every tournament. It's just like any other sport, it's your physical and mental health, so it's a huge, huge factor in anything.
Now, you're making a living doing this, but you have to be on the road a lot to do that.
Yeah, definitely. It's stressful at times. People ask me, what's it like going out there? Well, it's fun, like I said, when you're doing well. One thing that I struggle with is, I mean, I can be gone for 3 weeks at a time, and I'm ready to go home. And I'll be home for 2 or 3 days, and I'm ready to leave. It's like a love-hate relationship, mm-hmm. basically. It's just because that's what I do. I'm a bowler. That's what I know. But it's just it's hard to combat it sometimes. But it's part of the job. So
is the prize money getting bigger?
Hopefully soon. Hopefully the new deal with Fox, it'll get a little better. We also signed the PBA, brought in, it's called Flow Sports. It's a live streaming company. They live stream anywhere from football, I think like baseball, wrestling, anything. And now we have a Flow Bowling channel. And they've been doing really well. They've had 2 or 3 tournaments now where they've taken over. They will show qualifying on the live streaming service. And it's been really good quality lately. So hopefully with everything that comes through, it'll start to get better. The biggest struggle with prize money and everything is just sponsors. And I think just having bowling fans and competitive bowling people just don't understand so many things that go into the sport. And that's where we struggle to have the big money prize funds that you'll see in golf and mm-hmm. all these other professional athletes compete for. But I'm still optimistic. I think it'll hopefully next few years it'll turn around again.
What was your best game ever when you were just really in the groove and everything was working right for you professionally?
Yeah, I don't know. When I made my first TV show last year, I had been around the top five. It was a top five, what we call a stepladder. The 4 and 5 compete, and the winner of that faces 3 and so on for the TV show. I had been around the top five all week. It was really close, and we bowled on several different lane patterns that week as well, and we came down to the last pattern, and there was a few games left, and I just wasn't, like I said, I'm a field player, and I wasn't throwing it well. I wasn't seeing what I wanted to see at the time, and I don't know, I just dug deep, and my ball reps, they helped me out, and I threw possibly 10, 11, 12 of the best shots I could possibly make, and I shot, it was only 268, nothing like huge to do, but that was the first time, I mean, I'd experience something like that. That was to make the TV show, because the guys around me, I knew I could see the scores and who was around me, which you don't want to do. You don't want to pay attention to scores at times. Sometimes it's hard to ignore. It's the problem. But I could see. I knew who was where and what was going on, and they weren't doing very well. And I just put my head down, and it was time to go. This was it. And I was fortunate enough to make some of the best shots I've ever made. And I won't forget that one, because that was my first TV show, and it was really mental. Yeah, it was just a will and everything I want to do is just something I've been working for, and that was it. It came through at that point, so it was really cool.
Well, we've been talking to Matt Sanders, professional bowler, Wrights High School grad, 2017 Rookie of the Year with the Professional Bowling Association, and I know Matt, you say you work with youth groups and charities to also help out the community and also promote the sport. And you said you do this thing, Bowling for Kids, for the Boys and Girls Club. That's wonderful. And you also are going to start with the Philadelphia Hitmen. That's going to be televised. We're going to be looking forward to that. So you are a great ambassador for the sport. And like you said, we're hopefully going to see it on the Olympics someday. And we're going to, hopefully in my lifetime. And we're also seeing the sport growing in schools like Kentucky Wesleyan College in Owensboro, which is beginning its inaugural season. So, Matt, thanks, and keep riding the lightning. We found out what that is, and we'll be watching to see you in action on Fox Sports. 2 Main Street is presented by Evansville Regional Airport.
Coming up on 2 Main Street, we revisit my conversation with my former TV news co-anchor, Ann Comas. Ann and I go down memory lane, sharing some tales of our careers, both on and off air. Ann also talks about her passion for the Race for the Cure and the unforgettable story of how Ann paid a final farewell to TV weather icon Marcia Yockey, spreading her ashes by hanging out of an airplane over the town of Newburgh. Main Street on 88.3 WNIN-FM airs Thursday at noon and Saturday at 11, and our interviews are also online at WNIN.org. Two Main Street is presented by Evansville Regional Airport.